Hey, Carm Capriato, Remarkable Results Radio, episode 458. You know, technology has allowed us access to information at the speed of light. It has greatly improved our ways of communicating and interacting with one another, albeit less personally, and sometimes it can be used as an excuse not to communicate at all with each other.
But I think it's just our gut. If we see it being something that's running our lives, let's never let it replace the human element, the importance of being able to have face-to-face or even just a phone conversation.
Welcome, aftermarketers, to Remarkable Results Radio. Listen to learn just one thing from today's episode on your journey to remarkable results. Hi, friends. Carm Capriato here. Are you subscribed to a free podcast listening app? Have you joined our ecosystem for free? Discover some of the hottest topics and content you'll find in the aftermarket's digital realm, and it's only here on the Premier Automotive Aftermarket Podcast. Go to remarkableresults.biz/listen and find my listening app, over a dozen other free listening apps, and the newsletter sign up. Please join in. Let me carve out 10 seconds to remind you that it's not too late at all to book your trip to Apex 2019. Stop delaying. There are great Las Vegas hotels still available for Apex, but they'll go fast. Now remember, if you earn your living in the aftermarket, Apex is for you. Seminars, suppliers, new tech, training, and networking are all on the menu. Sign up now. Go to aapexshow.com. You'll find everything you need right there. Ready for some inspiring talk? I'm with Dr. John Passante, who's been a strong contributor to the podcast. You know, John is a legacy automotive aftermarket human resource professional, president, CEO of the Organizational Development Group. He's an adjunct professor at the University of the Aftermarket, listed in Who's Who in Training and Development and in the Automotive Hall of Fame. John is also an executive coach to many aftermarket leaders. Also with us is Rob Tinson. His distinguished aftermarket career began over 15 years ago, and he's held key sales and marketing roles in the industry. Rob is director of sales for North America at Schrader TPMS, a leading manufacturer of tire pressure monitoring systems, a part of Sensata Technologies. It's a treat to talk about understanding the basics of communicating and selling. Learn the intricacies of creating a partnership before making a sale. Understand the importance of humanizing a lot of things which were oversimplified by the use of technology. Dr. Passante and Rob Tinson are not bashful, serving up their professional experience dealing with and building customer relationships. Life works better when we communicate, either using tech or, better yet, face-to-face. Do you remember how to do that? Dr. John and Rob say communication is extremely important because it's where we build trust and credibility and how partnerships are built. Listen to John and Rob, two aftermarket professionals, share their wisdom and expertise for you and give you the insights to improve your communication strengths. Hey, a warm welcome to Dr. John Passante. Oh my God, John, good to see you again.
Thank you.
Legacy automotive aftermarket human resource guy, professional CEO of the Organizational Development Group. What else can I say about you? An adjunct professor at the University of the Aftermarket. And, you know, so many people that attend Leadership 2.0, they start talking about Dr. John. And I say, yeah, I know that guy. Glad to have you here. And Rob Tinson joins us, the director of sales at Schrader TPMS Solutions. Hey, Rob.
Hey, Carm. Great to be here.
So, John, you're hanging out with Rob today at where is it the Schrader headquarters or something?
We are at the Sensata Technologies headquarters. Sensata purchased Schrader about 4 years ago, and it's located in Attleboro, Massachusetts. So a great location for John and I to connect.
Well, John, thanks so much for bringing, Rob, just so that we can be as transparent as possible. I knew Rob's dad back in the day when he worked for Monroe. And of course, you know, Dr. John did a stint with Monroe, Tenneco. It's a small world. It's amazing. And when I say, so you got to interview me and Rob Tinson. And I said in the back of my mind, wow, his dad, Sid, I knew a Sid Tinson back in the day. And of course, Sid, your dad, and boy, what a great guy back in the days. And I want to share with anyone in the industry, if you ever remember selling or buying or putting Monroe shock barrels in your service center with the levers on it that showed, you know, a weak shock and a good shock, that was back in the day, that it was so much fun. And we would actually probably load up. That's the word, right, John? We would load up.
A loyal customer is a loaded customer.
Yeah. Oh, I know. And today, yeah, That's not the case. Well, anyway.
I understand.
Well, that's awesome. You know, Carm, I'll tell you, I've been in the aftermarket for about 15 years. And the first 5 years, I couldn't go anywhere, especially in the Northeast, without someone saying, Rob Tinson, you must be related to Sid. And so I love, of course, my dad's one of my best friends and my number one mentor. And I'm sitting next to one of my other big mentors with John. What was kind of that moment, that pinnacle moment where I feel like, you know, hey, I kind of made it, I guess, in this industry, was my dad called me up one day and he says, hey, you know, Rob, I think you made it. And I said, really? He says, I was talking to someone today and they said to me, Sid Tinson, you must be Rob's father. And that never happened. I mean, that never happened. So
that's a great story. I love it. So here we are. I require to do any podcast, and I'm not sure my audience even knows this, but we have to be face to face. Even though we're in the virtual studio, we have to be looking at each other. And any podcaster worth their salt knows that that's what you have to do in order to see body movement and facial expressions and really see what's going on. Because I talk with my hands, just like you do, John, right? And it seems like today, in this whole digital age, you know, this face-to-face communication thing is going away, guys. Do you find it, Rob, in your area of influence? And John, you're out teaching people all about, you know, HR and communications. I'd love to kind of go down this pathway for a bit. Who wants to start?
If you think about the broader picture, as human beings, we're social animals. And as such, you know, remember, as you know, man is an island. You've heard that, Carm. And you're right about technology today, where I see it. I'm a fan of technology, but I think sometimes it's used as a defense mechanism not to communicate. And if you think about the service providers, that the key purchases you make in life are your home or your automobile. And I come from the school of thought that you can't really build trust. If you're working on my automobile, which is worth thousands of dollars, that helps me go to work and helps my family, I take my kids to school or church or synagogue or whatever the case may be, I have to trust you. And I always subscribe to the notion that trust is the basis of all relationships. And I think you engage people and you endear people through face-to-face communications. You establish a relationship by listening. You watch people's body language. And you can't get that through an email, Carm. And so, I mean, that's just an overview where I come from, where I think that the human factor, the human touch, when you're working on somebody's automobile,
you
have to have that
because
credibility.
And
again, I don't think technology helps you do that. That's my professional opinion.
I want to stop right here and just tell everyone that Dr. John's been on with me before. I think we've maybe done three or four. Just go to the website, type in Passante and listen to these. Incredibly wise man. Rob, when it comes to face-to-face, it's generational, isn't it?
I think it is. I think we fall into a trap where, you know, we're just stuck in front of our computer and we're just emailing. And instead of picking up the phone and actually getting somebody on the phone, it's just as much of a challenge. You know, in our organization, we've got a really dynamic sales team that, you know, some stuff's just easier to get across on email. But, you know, when it comes down to a conversation that may get misconstrued over email, definitely picking up the phone. If you can be there in person, if you can do a Skype, WebEx with video, that certainly helps. But, you know, for instance, I think oftentimes, even in our marketing efforts, a message can be misunderstood even on a flyer or, you know, through an email. So in our particular organization where, you know, we've got a dynamic sales team that will, you know, be sending out emails and, you know, all sorts of different marketing messages. And I think in our particular category, when we're marketing to the service professional, on a flyer, whether it's a, you know, salesperson from a distributor handing over a flyer, trying to convey something, it can be sometimes misleading and confusing. For example, in TPMS, you have programmable sensors. You have a relearn process that's required. There's tools that are needed. And an email that just says program this and relearn this can get misconstrued. In some cases, it leads to a returned product because it was misdiagnosed, or at least they didn't know what they needed to do. The service professional didn't know that they needed to program the sensor first and then do that. So our language that we use in marketing can sometimes be misconstrued. Like, oh yeah, I did program it. I learned it to the vehicle. Well, that's a separate step. We've had more instances through our tech support where somebody picks up the phone, makes a call to our tech support, and they walk them through and they say, you've got to do this before you do this. And they say, I did program it. Well, you didn't. You installed it and tried to do the relearn procedure. So it's much more of an issue, certainly in our industry. But I think even, you know, in other, from a manufacturer standpoint, you know, other products have a certain process that they need to do to fully diagnose it. And the professional oftentimes will go to Google, they'll go to YouTube, and they'll try to find the answer instead of picking up the phone.
You just said YouTube. I was thinking about face-to-face, and you're describing the phone call and the person walking them through a step through audio, through listening. What if the calls, hey, can you get on a quick, you know, FaceTime? Do you think that a call that included video would be a more effective call than just the typical phone call to solve a problem?
We're doing that today, and I encourage, you know, any manufacturer who has a tech support line to include not only, you know, equip your tech support people with the ability to FaceTime, or WebEx might be a little bit more of a challenge, but everybody has a phone with the capabilities of doing some kind of video conferencing, and you can show them, you know, here's what I'm doing, and they can communicate back and forth. So as much as it is, you can convey the message as a face-to-face, you can show them, here's the part that I'm working with. Here's the tools that I'm working with. What am I doing wrong? We found that anytime we can get somebody to stop trying to diagnose it through Google, YouTube, there's some great sites out there that will show them the process of diagnosing something and fixing something. And in most cases, it's this or that. But in particular, I think we oftentimes will put a part in the return bucket and say, you know, it doesn't work. And you pick up the phone, you talk to somebody, I think we can walk through. And ultimately, it's just a better experience for the consumer because it's less downtime.
Well, it's easy to blame the part today and yesterday because we did something wrong. We diagnosed it wrong. We rushed to diagnostics. And, you know, we know the stats out there of the number of alleged defectives that really aren't. This whole face-to-face thing, John, has got to, or at least the technology that we have today, it is probably big in the work that you do in mentoring and human resourcing.
Yeah, it is. And I do a lot on Skype, you know, a lot face-to-face. Again, establish that relationship. And trust is the basis of all relationships, you know. And when you mentor or coach people, and Carm, I'm honored that people have shared with me things they've only told me. And which, are, again, that's, you know, a matter that sometimes they feel better, I feel worse because I know you. But I think everyone in our industry has lost customers and they don't know why. And I always say silence is not feedback. And we're all busy. Service providers are busy. Everybody in the distribution chain is busy. But we have to be careful that we don't take that client, that consumer that's coming to the, you know, to the service provider professional who's been coming for years and years, and all of a sudden they're not there anymore. And so, again, we have to be careful to say, are we listening to that customer? Are we really working on the bond of rapport, the rapport? I believe you have to have that contact with the person to get there. Can you imagine if you went to the doctor through emails and he diagnosed you?
Rumor has it that that exists today. No, I've never tried it.
I'm not going to try it, but you see what I'm saying, Carm, right? You want to see the style of that doctor, the communication. You know what I'm saying? You want to evaluate that person, true? Because they're going to take care of your body.
You say something so great. You know, recently I had my annual physical, and it's amazing when you sit there and you have a logical mind and you're always wanting to, I always want to learn. So I want, no matter what my experience is. So the doctor's, you know, pressing here and pressing there and feeling my ankles. And every once in a while I say, so what's the big deal about my ankles? Oh my God, we want to make sure you're not holding water. We don't want thick ankles if the rest of the body looks like this. And I'm pushing over here because in case you said, ouch, I have learned something from that, and on and on. On and on, and why do you listen to my neck? And those are all. How do you do that over the computer?
Huh? I mean, and again, I'm an old fashioned guy. Can you fall in love through technology?
They're trying out there. I think they're trying. Somebody's trying to make money on that.
I know. I mean, again, I'm dating myself, but I want to look my beautiful wife in the eye. And if I'm lucky, I might hold her hand. If I'm lucky, I might get a kiss. But I want to build a relationship. You understand? And not that we kiss our customers, but it's very much akin to relationship building. And you use technology to keep, you know, and you do use marketing, you send marketing information, product information. And when you meet with somebody, you ask them in that process, Carm, how would you like me to communicate with you?
That's huge right there. How do you want to be communicated with? I was thinking about trust, John, and I know I loved it. To listen to you because you always say the right words at the right time. And I was thinking of trust and high tech in the supplier service professional world. And, you know, a little bit ago, we invented how to order parts on the internet from our suppliers, right? And then that took a relationship chunk out because we would pick up the phone, you know, our favorite counterman would answer just through the myriad of a 10 second. We'd know how each other was because we talked to each other every day. We know about each other's lives and what's going on. If we were at bowling the other day, just by saying a few words. So there was a relationship there. That's gone now in a very large part of our industry, and we're ordering through clicking. So I don't have that interaction. I do have it with my driver still, but I don't have it with the guy who really is a next level up and brings value to my business. So how do you get the trust? My thought about getting the trust was the supplier has to deliver on the goods in the time frame he promised in the courtesy level. That took the place of my friendship on the phone is building trust through service performance. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. I love your example. I mean, it's collaboration. In other words, if I'm calling on you and you're a distributor and we establish together what you want your inventory level to be, A, B, C, and D categories, right? And we establish goals and objectives. We talk about how many inventory turns you're trying to establish in your business. And we monitor through that through technology, but we also, as part of that process, we talk to each other face-to-face. And then rather than, I want to sell you, and I do, but let's talk about what's good for you and good for, look, you and I have been in the industry a long time. And I always use the word partnership. And I still think partnerships is what it's all about today. If you win, I win. And we have to win together. And that's where I think face-to-face communication comes in. You set criteria. You set measurement. And the other thing I see today is some organizations having to come speak to their sales force. If there's a problem, and Rob, you can jump in a minute, the sales executives or sales managers with leaders are nervous about picking up the phone or having a face-to-face to say the company made a mistake or shipping's bad, whatever the case may be.
No, John, you're right. How do you say I'm sorry in an email and really mean it?
You know, oftentimes as in the sales world, whether depending on, you know, it doesn't matter all throughout the supply chain, whether you're a manufacturer representing a product or you're a WD or you're a service professional selling to the consumer, the first part of a sale is not to sell anything. It's to build the relationship and talk about the pictures on the wall, or if you're a fisher, or, you know, all these things just to try to build that commonality. I've tried to adopt, and even with our team, is don't go for the sale right away. You know, so if the consumer's sitting right in front of you and you know that they're walking into your facility, and whether it's a TPMS light that's on, or they know they've got a problem, they don't know how much this is going to cost, and we immediately say, hey, give me your keys and I'll bring it in. Now, this person's lost. They don't know if it's going to be $100 or $1,000. If you you kind of take that wall from, if they take that wall down and try to develop a rapport, say, I'm glad you came in, you know, Carm, thanks for coming in. You know, what seems to be the issue? Oh, that's a nice car that you have. You know, try to talk them and build that rapport. And in any sales process, I think it's a foolproof process where you develop the relationship, you discuss the need, you agree that, you know, this needs to be resolved, and then you close the sale. But I think without that relationship, you've lost the ability, for one, to be able to go back to them and say, here's the problem, and with confidence, I can fix your issue. If you have the relationship up front, you mentioned, how do I resolve a problem over email? It is a lot easier to have a conversation with a customer when you've developed the relationship and say, you know, hey, I need you to pay your bill, or hey, I need you to do this. If you don't have that relationship, those conversations are very, very challenging. You have to earn the right to ask some tough questions.
That's a mouthful right there. Yeah, you really have to earn the right if you want someone to, you know, respect, listen to you, agree that you may be the expert, that you are sincere enough. And then I think I had mentioned the word generational a while back. And, you know, all indications are is millennials have that hunchback today because they're always down and on their phone. And more we continue to hear that they're going to buy service by finding the you know, enough 5-star reviews. They're going to, you know, see what the website looks like. Do they feel good and comfortable about it? Make an appointment online. That's what they want to do. Then they're going to go in. And if your shop doesn't match the view that they had of you on the internet, then there's a distrust right away. And I think the boomers out there have a completely different way to manage communications than the millennials do today. And I almost think as leaders in different positions in our business, it service advisors, distribution angle, shop owners, they have to take a serious look at the generation that they're doing business with and realize how, like you said, Rob, how do you want to be communicated with? We've got to know. We can ask, but the default, there needs to be almost a default window that we know that they want to be communicated with. And, you know, a millennial that will leave, say, hey, could you text a review for me right away if I send you a link? They're on it like that. You say to a boomer, hey, can you give me a review? And they'll forget it in 30 minutes.
Well, it's interesting because I have managed millennials, Carm, and I think it's related to what our conversation this afternoon is. They want feedback on performance. And they want that face-to-face. That's my experience, Rob. And you could differ with me. But when, you know, I work with some wonderful millennials, and they come in and challenge me. They say, you're doing this, and I don't agree. So I cry. So, okay, help me. But the point is, when you and I start our career, I would never walk into my boss and say, you're doing this wrong, right? Because there was that gap between the power and you needed your job. But I think as consumers, they want feedback, and I agree with Rob. But still, I think the millennials still want some contact. That's my read, Rob.
I do. I think everybody's different. Yeah. Some people need that reinforcement.
Yeah, but John, consumer or team member? I mean, are there two different views here?
Well, don't forget, your employees are also a consumer.
And they may behave differently than if they're in-house and they work for you, Rob. I'm thinking of your Gen X, Rob.
I don't know what I am. I think I'm right in the middle. You know, maybe the best of both worlds, kind of understanding. I think there's a bridge here, and technology, and John made the point, technology is great. I mean, it's brought our industry. I think ordering parts online, there's a certain simplicity. There's a certain, you could see part images, all that stuff couldn't happen before on the phone. Now we've eliminated the phone call to the counter person. And in most cases, now that part's being delivered by a human, although we know that could potentially change, that part is being delivered and the relationship is with the person who delivered the part. And that's pretty much it. The one thing I think we need to do across the entire industry is to utilize technology so that we can actually engage with our customers and consumers better. And so there are a variety of platforms out there that you can, if you're in getting service on your vehicle, there's a variety of different programs that you can show them specifically what's going on with their vehicle. You can kind of zoom in and show them, okay, here's what needs to be replaced. Some folks don't like to have to bring consumers into their garage. They don't want to have, it's an OSHA violation. So they want to be able to utilize the technology where they can show them, turn around the computer screen and say, here's what's going on with your vehicle. And now that is now a nice engagement. That's a face-to-face, but I'm utilizing technology to convey something I couldn't do maybe 10 or 15 years ago.
In the podcast opening, I mentioned Apex. Now, let's quickly clarify. You know, Apex is not the same as the SEMA show, and I think you know that. Although both are held in the same week in Las Vegas, you know, at the SEMA show, you'll see cool specialty products, and I get it. I've been there. Wow, tons of fun. But if your livelihood is keeping your customers' vehicles on the road, and that's how you earn your living, then you have to attend Apex, because Apex is the business side of the aftermarket. Now, Apex is where you can see, feel, touch, and talk the business of the aftermarket. Everything you need is under one roof, including new tools and equipment, advanced training, hands-on demos, and one-on-one meetings with your suppliers and manufacturers, needless to mention the networking you have with your peers. And with your Apex badge, you can also visit the SEMA show. One badge does it all. So plan now to attend Apex Tuesday, November 5th through Thursday, November 7th at the Sands Expo in Las Vegas. Hey, to learn all about Apex and plan your visit to Industry Week, visit AAPEXshow.com. Tech is big today, and I'm really glad to have us gone where we are. I've got a couple of thoughts, Rob. Do you have any millennials that work for you?
Sure.
Good relationships? Do you know how they want to communicate?
I do. We communicate a variety of different ways. We do have a lot of phone calls because we're geographically kind of all over the place and traveling all over. You know, I think the phone call is still very important for them. You know, they like to kind of have that immediate, hey, I just had a meeting with somebody. I wanted to tell you about it. In some cases, somebody would prefer just to give me a weekly update, you know, on email. You kind of got to understand, you know, the everybody's different.
No one wants to text you their report?
Thankfully, no.
Obviously, they're listening to you. You're the boss. I get it.
I think you can learn an awful lot when you do listen and how they explain the situation. And it gives me the opportunity to ask more questions.
Hey, John, you continue to write articles for aftermarket magazines. And recently, I saw one and you reminded me of something extremely important, in that selling is a life skill. And I've always known that we are always selling. And you know, no matter when you just think you're talking to someone, sometimes you have an agenda, you're trying to get a point across, or you know, you want this or you want them to do that. And so we're always selling. Regarding relationships and trust, we are always selling. Tie the knot up for me on that.
Exactly right. I mean, whether it's if you're working for a service provider, you know, at any level, you touch the customer, and by definition, you're in sales. And I've always encouraged, and you and I have worked in some wonderful organizations in our careers, Carmen. Rob's working for a great company now. If you build a culture where everybody has the mindset of selling, I don't care if it's accounting, I don't care if it's engineering. And I was fortunate enough, you know, and I talk about Moog all the time, but we were able to build that culture. And when, and even at Monroe, and in fact, I worked with Rob's dad. I promoted him and moved him from Buffalo. And he still thanks me.
And you see the scar tissue I have here? Because everybody knows I'm from Buffalo.
But the sales team would come into the corporate office. They were revered, Carl, because that was the engine that drove the business. And to three of us, maybe that sounds like, John, that's like brushing your teeth. But it really isn't.
So, John, stop for me for a minute. Why do these big companies continue to promote CFOs in the president's job and not salespeople?
Numbers are king.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, John and I just recently had a conversation about...
Go ahead, Rob.
About this exact topic, you know, and I'll use my hands a little bit. You had marketing, you had marketing way over here to the left, okay? You had IT way over here to the right, and you had sales over here, and then somewhere way beyond, you had engineering, you know, from a manufacturing standpoint. Bridging those, in particular, the marketing folks, the sales folks, the IT, product management, you know, included in that IT, cataloging all over on this side. Bridging those people and developing a culture where you have regular communication. Because you're right, a great organization is an organization that's sales focused. And in our organization, it's imperative that our marketing folks know the value of what they're putting out. And it's a challenge in some cases, because if you do a social media post and, you know, you get X amount of likes and comments, what's the value of that? But when you can take marketing, sales, IT, cataloging, all those folks, you can have you build a culture of relationships and you have as much face-to-face meetings and you collaborate with each other. And if it's a sales focused organization, marketing then tends to think a little bit differently. What am I spending my time on? Is it driving the needle? And then IT understands, what am I spending my time on? Is it valuable to the company? And so when you can tie yourself to, like John said, it's all about the revenue. When you can tie yourself to revenue, for one, I think it's great job security. And I also think that it's important for any company, whether it's a service professional, a warehouse distributor, make sure that your people understand the value of a particular customer, and also the revenue and the revenue goals of your organization.
Well, accountants don't understand the people sides, but they continue to run companies.
When I was with Delphi, you know, Delphi, big OE, small aftermarket. And they assigned a director of finance. His whole career was with OE. For a period of time, about a year or so, I would Frank Orney said, he came out of office one night, he said, I'm giving you sales and marketing plus HR. And I said, great, Frank, I want three paychecks. He said, you're funny. I said, no, I'm not funny. He walked out. Well, expense report came in from a regional manager in New York City. The finance director comes down to my office and closes the door. He said, John, I can't approve this. It's $120 for lunch. In OE, they don't entertain. You understand. You know that. And I said to him, I said, usually in the aftermarket, that's breakfast. And I said, he and I said, you want to learn this industry? To his credit. He said, yes. I said, you give me a week of your time. He said, yes. So I called the regional manager in New York City. I said, he's coming out next week. I said, you work him 12 hours a day. You take him to every part of distribution. You take him to Brooklyn. You take him all over there. You take him to our toughest customer. And you when he gets on that plane on Friday, I want him to pass out when he gets in that seat because he's exhausted. So he comes in Monday morning, Carb, comes in with a white flag. Honest to God. Okay. I get it. So what I'm saying to you, the reason for the story is they do promote CFOs. And I think it's incumbent upon all of us to offer and to support. Because if I haven't walked in the shoes of an aftermarket industry, and I'm a financial person, I don't understand what it means why you have to lift product, why you have to discount. What is a return? Because that was all foreign to Delphi. There was no returns. This gentleman, all of a sudden in meetings, he was an advocate. I'm like, he would stand up in meetings and be an advocate for the sales force. That's just one example.
My takeaway with that is that your guy was willing to learn. He was willing to be with people and embrace the people. Some guys, they want to hide in the office. And when they're asked, hey, come out and see my customers. Well, I'm busy. The plane's leaving. And I've seen a little bit of that, John. You have an agenda or a strategic plan that you're trying to work that involves investing in people, it's sometimes, you know, a challenge. And I think this may resonate to the audience of this podcast, because it's still all about people, 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 and good cultures.
Yeah, Carl, my dad taught me, and I hope that, you know, through my career and others who are millennials, that it always is about the people. You know, people buy from people, and trust, to John's point earlier, goes a long way. I'm seeing some great examples. We talked about technology and how we can utilize technology to promote our people. And we work largely in the tire industry. And there's a couple of great companies that I follow on LinkedIn that every single week they promote and profile one of their employees. It could be a service manager. It could be a tire technician. It could be a general manager. It's everybody in the entire company, and they profile them.
Dwayne Myers from Dynamic out in Maryland?
He may be. He's not the one of them. No, I know two companies that are doing an extremely good job right now. And I apologize if there's others, but I follow VIP Auto based out of Maine. They do a fantastic job profiling their people. So they bring it full circle. They say, you know, they try to get consumers to follow them. And so that way they can walk in and they could say, hey, Carm, you know, great. I just realized that you're my neighbor and you just started 2 years ago and you went to this school. Another company's Bell Tire out of Michigan. They do a great job. They've changed their logo. They've changed their slogan to I'm your guy.
They've been there 50, 60 years, I think, haven't they?
They've made it so it's all about the people. And I think that's a great way to utilize technology, but still bring it back to the people are what drives us.
Hey, let's conclude this, John. This whole people thing, are we missing a little bit of the value of the people in our world, in our life, in our business at all?
The answer is yes. I mean, if you see, even when people travel, and I'm a people watcher, that's where I get all my material. I do my research watching people. Airports is a wonderful place. And even I see children ride bikes with their on their cell phone. You know, and I see fathers pushing a child on a swing on their cell phone. And so we're all preoccupied, and it's almost like technology is running our lives, which I worry about that because maybe inadvertently it devalues what we're talking about this afternoon.
But John, if I had a very young person, I don't care, let's pick the age group, 17 through 22, and I ask them, is technology running their lives? They'll say, it is my life.
But isn't that tragic?
You know, from our perspective, I think so. I really, really do. And I'm not, and I would love to have a meeting of the minds. In fact, you may have just given me an idea for a podcast. Let's get some young people on here along with some of us more established, wiser, older people, and maybe we can have a meeting of the minds.
I would love that. But if you think about, there's studies going on today about the damage of children. They're not sleeping well. There's psychological damages. And then a dramatic part of that is there's been suicides because of emails sent to young folks. And again, I'm not anti, I don't want to come across in this podcast that I'm anti-technology. I'm not. I'm saying there's a place for it. We have to be careful. People have dinner and everybody has their cell phone, family dinner, and everybody has their cell phone on when they're supposed to be talking to each other.
You've seen it. You felt it. You know what eye to eye is about. You know what embracing is about. You get it. And when you don't see it in today's young people, you say, I want to hug that person, but they're too busy doing, I don't know what they're doing. They're texting. We grew up, I believe, as a feely, touchy generation. And we don't see a lot of that today. Hug a young person and it's weak because I don't think they know. They don't get there's no vibe from it. And I know we're going off on this very interesting tangent, but you know what? We should be. Because that's what we do on the podcast. We kind of stretch people's minds at all. So, you know, Rob, you're a little younger than both of us. Are we crazy what we're talking about here?
I don't think you're crazy. I think I'm old enough to know it's right and young enough not to choose it, maybe. But the to steal a Rush lyric. But no, I think I think there is a gap. You know, I tell my wife this all the time. I said, you know, why are you on Facebook? And I'm not a big Facebook guy. She goes, I got all my news there. You know, I find out what's going on in the neighborhood. I find out what's going on with people that I've lost contact with. So there's some benefit, and I've learned to accept that because she does. You know, put it down and we have face-to-face conversations. But I think that might give a different impression to my younger kids who don't know that, you know, there's some benefit to it. And there's times where you just got to put it down because we want to have a conversation. There needs to be an established, you know, I look at, you know, from a culture and an organization, let's utilize it for what it's good for, but let's never let it replace the human element, the importance of being able to have face-to-face or even just a phone conversation. I don't know what the definition of that is, but I think it's just our gut. If we see it being something that's running our lives and we're missing opportunities to talk to people, and you can say, am I going to send this email and type it up over the next 30 minutes? Or is it more impactful for me to pick up the phone and call that person? Or maybe email them and say, can we carve out some time to talk? So now there's that bridge. Technology's allowed us to get their attention, but the phone call or the face-to-face meeting is really what the intent of that technology was used for.
What we do here on this podcast, and for you guys joining me today, really kind of stretched my thinking, And we continue to put conversation back in people's lives. You know, that's what we're doing here. We're creating an audio feed out to the World Wide Web where people in their spare time, their learning time, their exercise time can put in the earbuds, flip on the play button, and hear a conversation and not put their face into scrolling and scrolling and scrolling. Now, yes, there's things to learn on the scroll. I get it. Pictures to see, words to read. But I think we provide a very interesting service in our world. And thank God I've got two fabulous aftermarket professionals with me. Great to have Dr. John Passante. Again, John, thank you so much for all that you've done for the show. And Rob Tinson, Director of Sales, Schrader TPMS Solutions, and a friend. And your dad is a friend of mine from years ago, and I'm so glad to have met you, man.
Awesome to be here. Thanks, Carm.
Thank you very much, Carm.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.